a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
All right, let's bring Senate State Affairs to order. Welcome, and welcome to all our internet listeners. If you have a cell phone, please put it in silent mode. And with that, Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Hollein, Hunhoff, Lederman, here. Otten, here. Soholt, here. Solano, here. Sutton, here. Brown, here. Rave.
Here. We have a quorum. The minutes have been distributed, and I would take a motion to approve. Motion by Hollein, second by Soholt. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Minutes are approved. All right. Oh, stand by. Oh, yes, we do. All right. I was just reminded that we have new pages. So would our pages who are going to help out today, would you come up to the microphone, please, introduce yourself, tell us where you're from, where you go to school, and what you'd like to do after high school.
I am Jason Hansen. I'm from Britton, South Dakota. I go to Britton Heckla High School. And after high school, I'm going to go to NDSU for animal science.
Great. Thank you, Jason. Thanks for helping out.
My name is Seth Newton, and I'm from Parkston, and where I go to Parkston High School. And after that, I'm planning on going to University of St. Thomas for biology.
Excellent. Thank you guys for helping out today. Hope you have a good couple weeks. So, all right. All right, we have three investment council bills today. Just for the good of the committee, we're going to keep 69 below the line. There's a couple amendments still floating out there. We will take that on Wednesday. And we've got Senate Bill 70 and 71. I'm going to draw the line after 10. That was a mistake on my part. We got them on the wrong agenda, and I told the sponsor of those bills we'd hear them on Wednesday. So we will also hear those on Wednesday. Senator Brown.
Privilege
granted.
I was lucky enough to have my wife come up to peer today, and so along with that, I don't get the chance to do this all of the time. I had her bring up some world famous Gettysburg nut rolls. So we've got rolls in the back. Anyone that's here, if you'd like, go ahead and help yourself.
World famous Gettysburg nut rolls. All right. With that, we will open up committee hearing on Senate Bill 8. Senate Bill 8. Any proponents for Senate Bill 8? Do you have a handout, Matt?
I didn't bring a handout. I just have a few talking points and that I thought I'd talk through. Should I introduce myself first? Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Clark. I'm the State Investment Officer. I'm here on behalf of the State Investment Council to speak on behalf, first, of Senate Bill 8. The bill would clarify the exemption of investment-related contracts from state procurement rules, which otherwise would require requests for proposals, RFPs, or bids for professional contracts. There is currently an exemption in state law from these procurement rules for professional services contracts, and that is helpful, but our agency lawyer in the AG's office has recommended to us that we get clarification and therefore try to clarify that through this bill. The exemption is believed to be appropriate for investment-related activities, as it is difficult to utilize bid or RFP processes for investments when some funds are only open during short windows of time, and there may only be one fund open at a time during that window, and you have to either invest in it or you don't. And in almost all cases, in terms of making investment decisions for managers or for research services, that the decisions are based upon the unique nature of the research or the investment methods that those vendors have. SDCL 4529 already requires the state investment officer to invest funds in the best interest of the state to provide further protection. There is also extensive oversight of investment office-related activities by the Investment Council and by legislative audit. The Office of Procurement was supportive of the change based upon the nature of these kinds of investment contracts, indicating that they did not believe they were the kind of things you can really bid or do an RFP on. There is a proposed amendment, I should mention, that moves the location of the exemption. So it moves the language from the original Senate Bill 8 to a different place in the code where other exemptions from state procurement rules are located, so that the code is more tidy and we don't just have our exemption off all by itself. It'll be in with others. And, Mr. Chairman, that is all that I prepared.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Appreciate that. Are there any further proponents? Any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Holden. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Bureau of Administration. The Bureau of Administration does support this bill. When we reviewed it, however, we noticed that the new exemption language should likely be in a different location of the code. So with that, I have an amendment. If I can go ahead and speak to it. If you'll notice on the printed bill on lines 11, 12, and 13, the underscored language is the exemption language that the Investment Council is requesting. What the amendment does is deletes that from section one of the bill and inserts a new section, which is an amendment to 518A22, which is the procurement code and the listing of all the other exemptions to the bidding requirements. So the change that you'll see, it's a two-page amendment, but the change is the last item on the second page, number 18, which is slightly modified language than what you see in the original bill, but that was done because a couple of things they mentioned in the original bill are already exempted in other places in this chapter. So we did add, when I talked with their legal counsel, I did add the Division of Investment also into that language. So that would require also a title amendment. I hope you'll support the bill and the amendment, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, sir. Further proponents on Senate Bill 8. Any further proponents on Senate Bill 8? Last call for proponents. Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 8? Any opponents? Last call. Seeing none, we'll close committee. We'll close to opponents and proponents and open for committee questions. Are there any questions of the committee? All right, apparently it's quiet day. We will close questions and open for committee discussion and or action. We do have an amendment laying out there. Senator Lederman.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Amendment 8FB.
Motion by Lederman to move Amendment 8, Frank Bravo, second by Brown. Discussion on that amendment? Senator Lederman, none? Anyone? Okay. Let's go ahead and act on that motion. All those in favor of the motion to amend will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The bill is so amended. Okay. Further discussion and or action? Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, I move do pass.
Second.
Motion by Brown, do pass as amended on Senate Bill 8, second by Lederman. Discussion on that motion, Senator Brown?
Just briefly, I think many of us here in the legislature are exceptionally proud of what our investment council has been able to accomplish, not just over the last couple of years, but kind of over its existence. To be able to create a pension system that's fully funded without any debt. Clearly, our council has kind of become the envy of many other states. And to have that all done in-house here in South Dakota is terrific. So certainly, from my perspective, whenever there are tweaks that we can make that help make their job a little bit easier, certainly, I think we're going to be supportive of that, and that's why I think this looks like a reasonable request, and we should move this to the floor.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Further comments? All right. We have a do pass motion as amended on Senate Bill 8. All those in favor will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will please call the roll.
Senators Hohlein.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Soholt.
Aye.
Solano.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Passes.
The motion to pass as amended passes. We'll go to the floor as amended. Senator Brown.
I'd move consent.
Second. Motion for consent by Senator Brown, second by Senator Lederman. Comments on that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senate Bill 8 goes to the floor on the consent calendar. Thank you. Let's take a quick pause here. I've failed to recognize that we have some students in the room. Someone be brave and please stand up. Tell us where you're from. And
I'm Mrs. Deanna Fishback. I dropped my government class from Fady High School.
Excellent. Welcome to the Capitol. Hope you guys are having a good day. So you joined the right committee. I can tell you chose very wisely. All right. With that, let's open up testimony on Senate Bill 9. Any proponents, Senate Bill 9?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Matt Clark. I'm the State Investment Officer here representing the State Investment Council. As background, SDCL 4530 describes the process by which the Investment Council's budget is allocated to the funds that are managed. We deduct our budget from the funds that we manage. That's how we're funded. Currently, we allocate our budget across all of the funds proportionately to the size of the assets in each fund. The proposed change in Senate Bill 9 would lower the amount allocated to the cash flow fund to 0.02%. Now, our budget currently works out to be about 0.09%. That's allocated to all of the funds. And so we are proposing lowering the charge to the cash flow fund to 0.02%. So about a 70% reduction or thereabouts. And that would be made up for by allocating the remaining council budget across the rest of the funds. And so the cash flow fund is about 10% of the assets that we manage, so we'd be lowering the charge to them and increasing the charge by a little bit, about 0.01% to the other 90% of the funds that we manage, which is principally the retirement system and the trust funds. The reason for this is that the cash flow fund cannot invest in the higher cost types of investments that we invest for the retirement system and the trust funds. The cash flow fund can only invest in investment grade fixed income securities, which generally are very low cost in the investment industry. And so it's always seemed unfair that they had to pay the same charge for basically a plain vanilla, simple little service that we're providing for them as what the retirement systems and the trust funds would pay for the fancied up full suite of services that we provide for them. And that became especially noticeable in this almost zero interest rate environment. Interest rates are so close to zero now that we can't earn very much for the cash flow fund anyway. And so to me, this unfair charge was sticking out like a sore thumb. And so we thought it was a good time to address this. The proposed legislation would also allow the state investment officer to transfer these funds from the retirement system and the trust funds and the cash flow fund into the investment council's budget account in the cash flow fund in pieces throughout the year instead of in one lump sum amount in full up front, like is the case today. The implication is that we can leave more of the money in the retirement system and the trust funds longer during the year and only bring it over two or three times during the year, so we don't have so much extra money sitting in the cash flow fund earning zero. We can leave it in the trust funds and retirement systems earning hopefully higher returns there on average over the long term. And also, in years, given that incentive compensation is a big part of the council's budget expenditures, in years where performance is poor for several year period of time, incentives would be quite low. We wouldn't need major chunks of our budget, and therefore we wouldn't transfer it over at all. It would just stay in the funds. Whereas now, we transfer it all over, and then it just sits there. And if we have a lot extra at the end of the year, then it reduces the amount we transfer the following year, but it needlessly sat in the cash flow fund for the whole year, earning the lower rate of interest. And then the proposed legislation also removes a reference to the cement plant retirement system that had been in this section of law. And as you may know, the cement plant was merged in with the South Dakota retirement system based on legislation effective April 1st of 2014, so it no longer exists as a standalone entity. And we thought as long as we're in to this section of laws, we might as well clean that up. And that is all the comments that I have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Any further proponents? Senate Bill 9. Any further proponents?
Morning, Mr. Chairman. Jim Twilliger with the Bureau of Finance and Management. Mr. Clark did a great job of describing what Senate Bill 9 does. Just to give you a little background, over the last year or so, we've been, myself, Commissioner Dilges, Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Clark, and Sherry Nelson down the Investment Council, we've been looking at the cash flow fund, trying to brainstorm different ways and try and squeeze a little bit more yield out of that, because right now our yield is around 90 basis points, a little less than 1%. And so we've been kind of looking at the cash flow fund, and Senate Bill 9 is kind of one of the things that came up, and when we're looking at allocating those expenses that were essentially looked like it was unfair because the cash flow fund is invested in a lot more safe securities. And so that this is one of those ideas that came out, and we certainly support that. And then the second piece where the Investment Council allocates the cash to fund their operations is certainly a good idea, so we're not running a large cash balance in their operating account, which is invested in the cash flow fund. It would be a good idea to leave more of those funds throughout the year in the trust fund where they can earn a higher rate of return over the long term. And so the Bureau of Finance Management certainly supports Senate Bill 9, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Terwilliger. Any further proponents, Senate Bill 9? Any further proponents on Senate Bill 9? Last call. Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 9? Any opponents? Last call. Seeing none, we'll close testimony and open to committee questions. Question, Senator Sutton.
Question for Mr. Clark. Well, thank you, Mr. Clark, and I'll preface this by saying you guys do an excellent job with the investments of these dollars. My question would be, does this create more risk for the dollars that would, or this change? Does this create more risk for those dollars?
Mr. Chairman, to the extent that with regard to the partial transfers throughout the year instead of the full transfer up front, is that the what the question's regarding?
It would be both parts, I think.
Okay. For the charge part, that would have zero impact on how the money is invested at all, merely how we're allocating the council's budget to them. We're charging them, basically, to cover their share of our budget. And so the benefit to the cash flow fund is then picked up by the trust funds and the retirement system picking up the extra, and it's about $1.2 million is about what it amounts to over time, and so it's really just a question of fairness and trying to be proportional in terms of what we charge them to the benefits they gain. With regard to the transfers throughout the year, the retirement system and the trust funds are invested, you know, more longer term oriented. And so they would be in stocks and real estate and things like that. And there's certainly a chance that, you know, if we left some of our budget in those funds until later in the year, the markets could go down. I don't think it's going to be material to the size of those funds. It wouldn't even be a rounding on any of our performance numbers. It's more of a, in principle, try to keep the money where it might earn a higher amount of return. But certainly, if those dollars are in the retirement system and the trust funds a little bit longer, then if our long-term assumed return is about 7, let's say 6 or 7 for the trust funds in the retirement system, and maybe 2 or 3 for the cash flow fund once interest rates recover from being near zero today, well, that higher return will come at the expense of more volatility. And so there is always a chance that, you know, the markets can go down in the short term.
Well, thank you for the response, and maybe that was my concern a little bit, but you know, I think there's risk of not earning anything at all if you leave it in the cash flow fund as well. And so I appreciate your candor and your answer, and I think that answers my question.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Further questions of the committee? Any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, we'll close questions and open to committee discussion and or action. Senator Soholt.
I would move do pass on Senate Bill 9.
Motion do pass by Soholt, second by Otten. Comments on that motion, Senator Soholt?
You know, just to, again, congratulate our investment council and the work that they've done, and consistently looking out for ways that we can maximize our production within all of our funds, understanding that investment in and of itself inherently carries risk. And I appreciate Senator Sutton's question regarding that, and that these are predicted choices that we're trying to make to have a maximum return on our investment and ultimate solvency.
Excellent. Any further discussion? With that, we have a do pass motion before us on Senate Bill 9. All those in favor will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Hollein.
Aye.
Hunhoff. Lederman.
Excused.
Otten.
Aye.
Soholt.
Aye.
Solano.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Passes.
Senate Bill 9, having received a majority vote of the members elect, goes to the floor with due pass motion. It is not appropriate to put it on consent because it is going to require two-thirds, I believe, other funds. So with that, we will move on to Senate Bill 10. Open up for proponent testimony on Senate Bill 10. It's Mr. Clark Day.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning,
members
again.
Of the committee. My name is Matt Clark, and I'm the State Investment Officer again, and represent the Investment Council. I'd like to speak on Senate 10 as background. The cash flow fund, which this relates to, is comprised of over 500 separately identified state accounts, and there is a legal list of investments for this cash flow fund. And this is the fund that we were just talking about on a previous bill that related to being managed more simply. And this legal list limits the investment to fixed income securities only. And they have to be governments or government agency securities or investment grade corporates. And the investment grade requirement for the corporates, and this is defined in statute as being in the four highest rating classifications by a rating agency, that requirement currently is interpreted as being enforced throughout the holding period of that corporate bond investment. And so if we buy a bond and it is rated investment grade and it gets downgraded to below investment grade, which would commonly be called junk bonds, the current statute would require that we sell that bond promptly. Now, the problem is that many investors in similar funds such as this have requirements to invest in investment-grade bonds, and they're all trying to file out of the small door all at the same time. And the prices tend to be very depressed following those ratings because of all the regulatory-related selling pressure. So what Senate Bill 10 would do is it would add the language at time of purchase in front of the requirement to be an investment-grade rated corporate bond. That would allow us to wait and sell the bond down the road a while when the selling pressure abated, or even keep the bond and continue to hold it if our internal research efforts indicate that it's a bargain. I would add that the Investment Council has a team of people in the office that focuses exclusively on junk bonds called high yield and distressed debt. And so our cash flow fund portfolio manager would have a resource available in our office to go to this other department that deals in all these typically dicey bonds. And these cash flow fund bonds that would get downgraded in most cases would probably be much higher quality than the typical junk bonds that our high yield team would be investing in, but they would be able to help. And so that would be the change. I would add that the Investment Council intends, and I would assure you that the council will pass a policy that would limit how much the size of the accumulation of these kind of downgraded securities. We've talked about a variety of limits, but in no event do I expect a limit of greater than 10%. So it would be a limit of 10%, or the limit might be tighter than that, but I expect 10% would be the limit on the accumulation of downgraded securities, in which case then internal policy would then require us to sell anyway, but we could sell something that had been downgraded a while earlier if something new gets downgraded, you know, where the selling pressure had abated. And so that is basically what the bill accomplishes. There is, again, similar to a previous bill, a reference to the cement plant retirement system that is also being removed just to clean up that out of the statute. And that was my prepared remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Are there any further proponents on Senate Bill 10? Mr. Twilliger is back.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Twilliger with BFM. Mr. Clark did a great job explaining this bill. It's another one of the little tweaks that kind of came across when we were talking about trying to squeeze a little bit more yield out of the cash flow fund. And it certainly makes sense that not to sell these bonds once they get downgraded in a fire sale where the value is very depressed, as Mr. Clark talked about, allow them to hold a little bit longer until that value comes back up and look to sell. And so one of the small things that we're looking at to try and squeeze a little bit more yield out of the cash flow fund, and we'll certainly support it and stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Further proponents on Senate Bill 10. Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 10? Any opponents? All right. With that, we'll close committee questions. Questions of the committee? Senator, saw your hand go up. I thought you had a question. Any other questions? Senate Bill 10. All right. With that, we'll close to discussion and or action. Senator Sutton.
I move do pass.
Motion do pass by Sutton, second by Solano. Discussion on that motion. Senator Sutton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that the Investment Council does a very good job. They take their job very seriously, and they work with these things every single day, and it's their job to do a good job. And I think it's important that we give them as much flexibility as possible and not pigeonhole them into a corner with how they're doing their job. And I think this would allow some more flexibility to do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any further remarks on Senate Bill 10? Mr. Clark, I'm going to take a little latitude here. I would wonder if you'd be willing to stay for a few minutes after we finish our action on this bill for the benefit of the high school students, because I know this table knows everything there is to know about the Investment Council and where our funds are at. But just for the kids, I mean, that's what I'm... just like an overview of where we're at and where you think we're going to go. So with that, any further discussion on the motion to pass? With that, all those in favor will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Hollein.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Soholt.
Aye.
Solano.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Passes.
Senate Bill 10 will go to the floor with a due pass motion. Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, I'd move consent.
Second.
Motion consent by Brown, second by Lederman. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senate Bill 10 go to the floor on the consent calendar. With that, Mr. Clark.
You ready?
Before you start, Senate Bill 9, who would like to carry that on the floor? Anybody volunteer? I think that's Senator Sutton written all over it. All right. Thank you, Senator Sutton. Would you have your staff get some talking points, Senator Sutton, on 9? Thank you. I think, Matt, I would just like, for the benefit of the group, to have just an overview of where you are at, where you think the future is going to lead us. I know we've had an exceptional probably 3 or 4 years, as we had discussed, and just kind of maybe give us a brief overview.
Okay, will do. I always thought if I got fired, I'd maybe be a teacher because I'd like that better. And so here's my chance, I guess. And the Investment Council manages over $10 billion. It's actually up to about $13 billion of state assets. The largest part of that is the South Dakota Retirement System, and that's over $10 billion. And then there's some trust funds that the state has from various sources, selling the cement plant, suing the tobacco companies for getting people sick and things like that, caused monies to be available for trust funds to be established. And then the state has a checking account where all the different state agencies and everything from the colleges to state government agencies of the state that build college buildings and things like that all pool their money together, and that state checking account balance is over $1 billion, $1.4 billion. And so we manage that as well. And the way that most of the money is managed, retirement system assets, for example, and the trust funds are very similar, is that we decide what we think the average investment profile should look like if all markets were roughly fairly valued. And our answer to that is we think about 70% of the money should be invested in stocks and other things that act like stocks, like real estate or very risky bonds to corporations that are highly leveraged where they might go bankrupt. And as part of that, you might actually end up with stock in the company. You might own the company at the end of the day. And so 70% of the money is invested in those kinds of things, which in the short term can be very risky. We tell people, be prepared to lose half your money in that kind of stuff. Every so many years, every decade, and if not in a decade, for sure every 2 decades, you're going to have one of these financial crises. And I've been around long enough now that I've been through one in the crash of 87, and I was the international guy in the Asia crisis when Asian markets were down well over half in the late 90s. And then we had the internet bubble and the crash then, and then just this last financial crisis. So that's 4 or 5 for me, so I'm probably ready to retire. And but you're going to lose half your money at times like that. And the key is you have to understand that going in, and only invest as much in risky things as you know you can stomach the short-term pain, and endure through that adversity, and be patient enough to wait to come out the other side. And we always say that we have zero idea what's going to happen today or the next 5 minutes. I don't even have a clue what's going to happen in the next year. We're focusing on where things deserve to be out over the next decade or more. And strangely enough, even though we never care about the short term, we only care about the 10 plus year horizons, often things work out within about 3 years. It seems like you go from the markets are being crazy on the high side and you're having internet manias and things like that to a crash all 3 years later. And then another 3 years, you're already recovered and going back up again. And so it seems like people panic and then they get greedy, you know, in about 3 or 4 year time frames. But we're always trying to look through that out to the 10-year time frames and take advantage of other people's fear and greed. When they panic and things are cheap, well, we don't just have 70% in stocks and real estate and things like that. We go to our maximum of 80%. And when the markets get very expensive, like they did in the internet bubble, we'll go to the bottom of our end of our range, which would be closer to 50% in stocks and real estate and things like that. And the rest of the money outside of the amount in stocks and real estate would be invested in safe bonds or money markets or things like that. And so the work that the council does to try to figure out if the markets are cheap or expensive is we have teams of analysts in our office. We have basically 30 people that are CPAs and finance majors and math majors and people like that, all near 4-point students in the university level, and so it's extremely competitive. And they spend their days studying companies and economies around the world and try to forecast the cash flow that will come from these companies. We always say we invest money today to get more money back tomorrow. And the best investments are those that give you the most money back later compared to what you invest today adjusted for risk. And so if that's what we're trying to accomplish, well, what you pay today is simply the price, and you can look that up in the Wall Street Journal or on CNBC or anything like that on the internet. What you can't look up are forecasts of the cash you're going to get back from these investments. And so our people's job is to understand, why do companies make money? Why are they better than their competitors? Why will their customers pay a premium for their product or service instead of, you know, buy something cheaper elsewhere? And try to understand why those things will last so that we can try to forecast the cash flow and the profits that these companies and or the real estate will generate out decades into the future. And once we have these forecast cash flow streams, we can discount them back to today's value. And the way you do that, for example, if you had $1.10 in a year, the present value of that today would be $1 if interest rates are 10%. You just discount it back by the rate of interest. Well, part of our people's job is to figure out, well, what rate of interest do you use to discount back? And do you use the near zero interest rates that are present today or high ones that they might be in the future? And so we have teams of people that try to figure out, well, what are normal economic conditions like, and what would interest rates be in those normal times? And what is the risk of every kind of investment's cash flows? And the riskier the cash flows, then we have to probability weight the odds that you're not going to get the money, that they're going to go bankrupt or they'll disappear and you won't get those cash flows. So there's a probability of getting them weighting attached to every cash flow forecast. And then the risk of that also impacts how much of a return we want to earn to be fair. And we discount back based on that fair return to today's value. And we say that's the fair price for every investment. And so our people do that for every major company around the world, and large real estate companies and for risky bonds as well. We have a fair appraised value for all these companies. And then we can simply compare the price to that and see which ones are cheap. And then we run it through our risk control measures to make sure we don't put it all into energy stocks like right now, given how low oil prices are falling. We don't want to put it all into bank stocks when the banks were all going under. Now, before this is through, we'll probably be heavily overweight energy stocks because that's what we do. We buy into crises. And we were definitely heavily overweight banking stocks during the banking crisis. And during the real estate recession, we were very overweight home building stocks, for example, when home prices were crashing. After everyone else gets scared and the prices are very cheap, then that's when investments look very cheap on our process. And we basically load up and we plug our nose and we know we're in for a five-year wait, and then it's all about being willing to endure the pain in the meantime of watching what you bought continue to go down and get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and then you just have to keep buying more and more and more and be patient to wait for the other side. So what we do is very much like the whole essence of education itself, which is to suffer today so that you have a better life in the future. And I was a long-distance runner when I was in high school and college for a little while, and that was pretty much my track career, too, was all about enduring pain, because I wasn't as fast as the people who could be the sprinters. And on the investment side, it's the same thing. We're just not as quick as these fast-trading hedge fund types, and we know we can't beat them at their game. They're either quicker or smarter than we are, but we know that we have greater willingness to endure pain, and we have more patience, and we have better support than they have, and that's probably our biggest competitive advantages is the support that we have here in South Dakota from the governor's office, the legislature, the boards on the retirement systems, our board at the investment council, thousands of teachers throughout the state of South Dakota that pay attention to the retirement system and have read our reports over the years that understand how we do things. All of those people cheer us on and pat us on the back during the crisis when we lose half the money. And they say, well, you know, it'll work out okay. Just keep doing what you always do. And that's what every single person that we talked to said during the crisis. And I know in most states, most people that have my job, it was all about getting called in to account for how much you lost and talking about how you're going to stop the bleeding and how are you going to avoid this from happening next time. And here in South Dakota, it was all about, well, this is what we do. You know, we're patient and we stay the course and it always works out in the end for us. And that's what we did again this time. And so that's the story, basically, I think, for South Dakota's investments.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time and giving some background and help get us level set for the session. So thank you for coming, Mr. Clark. If the committee would indulge me, and being no objection, we missed the title amendment on Senate Bill 8, so I'd like to bring that back up, and if someone would make a motion to amend the title, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, I move 8FTA for the title amendment.
Motion by Lederman, second by Sutton, to amend the title on Senate Bill 8 with Frank Tango Alpha. Any comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Holine, Hunhoff, Lederman, Otten, Soholt, Solano, Sutton, Brown, Rave.
Aye. Motion to amend title passes. Thank you. Senator Brown.
Just for clarification, we had put that on consent. I would assume that will remain there and we don't need to take any further action.
Is there any objection from the committee to leave that on the consent calendar? Seeing none, thank you. With that, I have no further business of the committee today. We'll draw the line and got some work ahead of us on Wednesday. So with that, I would take a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Brown, second by Lederman to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. We are adjourned.